Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Why are they the ultimate? Well, one of the reasons is because they're going to help you with ICD-10, the transition to the new codes. You need to know it, and you probably don't know it as well as you should. Check them out at www.webpt.com/podcast to find out more about ICD-10 for a free demo and a lot more. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Sirakabrad here with Dr. Erson Religioso on the Therapy Insiders podcast, part of the UpDoc media family. So the last podcast you heard, we had Dr. Joe Palmer on with Ryan Kleps from Strive Labs, talking about their cool Strive Hub product. So this week we're switching up co-hosts, and Erson's back and Joe is out. It's musical chairs of co-hosts, I feel like it's been lately, Erson, but good to have you back. How's it going, man?
It's good to be back. I mean, actually for me, it's only been a week because we recorded two this week. So,
well, don't
feel like I wasn't really gone.
Don't give away our
secrets.
It's
good to be back. It's good to be back regardless from wherever.
Well, it's not like you really leave that much because I talk to you quite often anyway, but off the record.
I know, I feel like, I was like, did we not talk? Because I just felt like I did that several times today.
Yeah, we talk a lot. We got a lot of stuff in the works for UpDoc Media. So at this point, you've heard already about our launching of our courses, the Garage Series, Erson being the first with the eclectic approach to come by and teach in December. So we're very excited about that. So if you haven't signed up yet, check it out at updocmedia.com. Erson, how do you feel about coming to Maryland and teaching some courses in a garage, a luxury garage?
I'm excited. You know, the backdrop makes it seem like I'll be at like the Comedy Cellar, and I just kind of picture I'm going to be monologuing in front of a mic, and every time we kind of transition to from like lecture to lab, there's going to be Seinfeld twanging, you know.
For those of you that are actually interested in taking the course, I assure you, Erson will not be telling jokes. Please do not let that deter you from signing up for the course.
What do you mean? Of course I'll be telling jokes. It's just not only jokes. There's also going to be content, clinical content.
All right. Well, to cover that up and to make sure that you still come, we will be having Chipotle as the catering for the course. So if you're coming for the 2 days, you will eat Chipotle. Now, on the topic of eating.
Yeah. And Gene actually still owes me a triple meat Chipotle and beer back from when I won a bet.
That's right. That was back in the day when we were betting on whether at Cinema Air, shout out, welcome back to Twitter, by the way, was a male or female, and Erson won that bet, which I think it was a little bit loaded up against me, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm not.
You mean
bitter.
It wasn't rigged or anything? I didn't know either.
You know, that's what you say. But look, it is what it is. And I was gonna pay up. I was gonna go to Chipotle. I was gonna take you. I was gonna order a straight up triple meat bowl right there in front of them to see their face. But no such thing now, Erson. There's no triple meat for you, because
you've gone to the
green side. You have gone straight green side. And
I wouldn't say straight. I'm more of like a 80-20, 90-10 kind of thing. You can't go all in with these things.
You can't go all in.
Too much of any good thing is still not a good thing. I haven't got 100%. I haven't got 100%. Let's just put it this way.
Okay. Well,
the eclectic approach to nutrition.
I can't imagine not consuming copious amounts of meat in a week. So I'm hoping on this episode, on this podcast, that between you and our guest that you're about to introduce, you can enlighten me on the beauty and the deliciousness of our greener side, our more natural side. But I mean, we eat a lot of natural food and organic foods and all that stuff. But, you know, we still mix in, veggies. I had a little kale with dinner today with some salmon. So we do eat green and we eat veggies, but we don't eat just that. So Urson, let's just go right into it with our guest, and maybe I'll be outnumbered here, but I'm hoping to come out with a newfound knowledge and appreciation of non-meat.
Yeah, I mean, I've only been mostly green for about 2 months now, so, you know, it's not like it's a huge lifestyle change for me, and certainly from someone who was doing what I called evidence-based grilling. You know, it was like charcoal grilling. I did a lot of research on how to make the best meat, and I even got a smoker. It was a very popular picture on Facebook where I actually took a selfie with me and my new Weber Smoky Mountain that I used a grand total of 4 times before my wife had a gallbladder attack, you know? And so I was kind of forced. She was like, she went to see her doctor, was kind of confirmed. This is actually while I was teaching out in Italy. I tried to Skype her, and she's like, I'm on the ground in severe pain. I can't even move. I just put the kids to bed. So, you know, for her, it was kind of, hey, we can remove your gallbladder, or you could drastically change your diet. And, you know, after most, she knows a lot of vegans, and after she went vegan, she was completely asymptomatic in 2 weeks. So I figured, like, why is she going to be the only one to do this? And I decided to do it as well. But, you know, I was telling a story on Twitter and then getting bashed, of course, usually, because, like, people can't imagine giving up meat. Like, I could never imagine giving up meat.
And I probably would have said at that point, take the gallbladder. Just take it, goddammit. I want my steak. Take it.
Right. Yes, give me the statins. Statins for life. And take my gallbladder while you're at it. And also, I mean, I also had genetically predisposed to having high cholesterol. So no matter how much I exercised, and I eat pretty healthy too, mostly organic stuff. We have a farm share. But no matter how much I exercised and tried to eat lean meats and everything, I still had high cholesterol. So now that's all good. And, I've never felt better, had more energy. And I thought someone else jumped on the Twitter conversation and shared some research on going green. And that was one Dr. Mike Eisenhart. And after I kind of looked at his website and saw that he had a triple threat of business going on between PT clinic, fitness side, and something called Fuel Good, which I think is an awesome brand. I thought, hey, you know, let's invite this guy into podcast, so I'm not the only crazy green eating person on the podcast. So welcome, Mike.
Thanks. That's awesome. It's a great intro.
Yeah. So tell us about your story. How did you end up going green? You know, how long have you been doing it for? Because me, I'm no expert. If you can't call 2 months an expert.
I want to know when the last time is you had meat. Are you strictly green, or are you just no more meat?
No. I'm not strict, really, either way. I consider myself 81%, and I say that specifically, of course, because I'm 90 by 90. I try to get it 90% right 90% of the time.
81%.
I'm an 81%er. So yeah, that's precision. No, but I mean, I'll eat whatever's in front of me, but I just, you know, from a health perspective, it's just such a major difference.
All right. Well, in that case, we can keep this podcast going. When did this transition happen? Like, Urson's was because his wife had a gallbladder attack, and for some reason she chose to change her diet instead of giving up a gallbladder. God knows why. But what about you? Was there some kind of moment where you said, aha, I should really think about switching how I consume food?
So, yeah, 14 years ago, my oldest daughter had a pretty severe dairy allergy. So not just like a, you know, sensitivity. But, you know, here we are, like, new parents and not knowing anything about what it takes to be a parent, right? And this kid is miserable all the time. I mean, like, one miserable little child. And you know, we took her and the allergist said, oh, you know, this kid is allergic to dairy and soy and all these, like, things. And we're going, oh, my gosh, you know. So as it progressed, it turned out she was just allergic to dairy. And my wife is, you know, she's awesome, so she tried to learn everything she possibly could and started looking at it and saying, look, there's dairy in everything. And so we kind of both committed as, you know, good new parents, or at least try to be, to learn everything we could. And once you start reading the research, I mean, it's pretty profound. It sort of knocks you down a little bit. And so we both, tried it, you know, and instantly saw changes kind of like in our bodies. Like, I mean, I've never been sort of a big guy, you know, I'm usually try to keep myself pretty fit. And I mean, I lost 10 pounds, like seemingly overnight. My blood work like completely changed. And so we over those 14 years, we just continued to learn more and more. Maybe like 6 years ago, we decided that we were going to give it a whirl and add it to our clinical space. And just because we really needed a place for people to hang out, we kind of try to run a business that is real relationship based in our community. And so people wanted to hang out and we didn't have space. So we opened the cafe.
Wait, hold on a second here. Hold on. So you, wait. You read research and you made your food decisions based on research, not based on shared Facebook links? I'm sorry. Yeah, what kind of well, craziness are you there's talking that. Here? What, Mike? All right. You know what? This.
It was a long time ago. Facebook wasn't quite as popular amongst PTs back then.
Oh, that's true. 14 years ago. You're right. Facebook. Okay. Once again, this podcast can go on.
Yeah, well, he's probably about 10, right? I mean, how old was, let's see, how old is he now? I don't know. Zuckerberg, what is he, like 25? I don't even know.
He was 15 when he started Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm changing to plant-based when this guy's like, you know, I mean, he's barely a sophomore in high school at this point.
Right,
he's
right,
in diapers. Yeah. Mike's making green smoothies and Zuckerberg is in diaper. Shout out, in case he's listening.
Know, it is quite an amazing thing. I mean, my wife, she never quite fully recovered after having our last one, which is she's about 18 months now. My wife's been doing this about 2.5 months. And I mean, she found out she was pregnant. I mean, we found out she was pregnant shortly after doing this, but we didn't quite know for at least a month. But she wasn't, she never really had enough energy to work out. And certainly it's easy to say, oh, you're exhausted because you're like always wrangling four kids and we homeschool too. So, it was easy to see why she was tired and kind of blame it on, oh, she's just watching the kids and homeschooling the kids and doing all that stuff. But, shortly after being, going green, she had more energy than ever. She pretty much gave up coffee and she was drinking four coffees a day and she got back up to working out like a high interval kind of training program and running, 30 minutes a day, 6 to 7 days a week. I mean, she hadn't done that. Since the last one was born in over a year. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, she's gone back to eating eggs and a little dairy now because we're expecting our fifth in March. So, but I mean, she still feels amazing. And even the changes in me too. I actually, since when did I teach in June, Italy in June, I believe. Or maybe even July, but either way, I've been doing this about 8 weeks. I actually lost 19 pounds already. It's nuts.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, I didn't really consider myself big, but man, all this traveling, it's hard to eat like super healthy, but yeah. And my running, like I just have more energy to work out. It is nuts. Like I didn't consider myself a big guy, but I was kind of pushing it.
All right, you guys got to help me out here. So I hear this all the time, you know, I get more energy, I feel better. And I can believe it, but here's a couple things, and this is mostly coming from me because I'm curious. My metabolism is I'm always hungry. Like my life is pretty much goes around eating, so I have to have food in very regular intervals. And like you, I mean, Mike, I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'10", 5'11" ish, and between 170 to 175. So if I go a stretch where I don't eat a lot, I can lose weight fairly easily, but that's not really what I want. So I want to maintain or put on weight with working out. You know, a lot of guys work out and they don't really want to lose a ton of weight. How does that work in terms of feeling full or putting on, you know, getting your protein in and things like that? You know, do you have a routine? Do you have recipes, things that you can share, Mike, obviously, with the restaurant and everything? Because, I would love to hear what a day in what a life in your day sounds like or a day in your life sounds like in terms of nutrition and what you eat.
Yeah, so, I mean, in general, I probably eat more than most, right? I mean, that's one of the things that we always kind of find funny. people are eating this way can eat a ton more, right? Because, you know, it's low calorie, of course, in general. So if you like to eat, it's a win because, you know, you can definitely eat and eat and eat, and you can really be eating all day and be fine. But, you know, there's no shortage of things like protein and you know, I mean, you can get it. You just have to get a little bit more knowledgeable about food. So, you know, you start looking at things like beans, legumes, and you know, there's a ton of protein. I mean, and you can find, I mean, there are MMA fighters and bodybuilders who are vegan, and they, you know, they don't look small. You know, so you can, I mean, you know, I always link it back. You know, the ongoing thing is gorillas are vegan. They're not small. You know, so, I mean, like you can get your protein and stuff, but you know, you just have to mix it up and make sure you know what you're eating. So yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share recipes or put people, you know, kind of on that track. But I mean, it definitely is. It's a wild thing. I mean, we've had, I have a guy actually who's works with us, and he went vegan for training purposes, right? He was trying to run a 100-mile ultra marathon. And so here's this guy who's like, you know, surrounded by PTs all the time, and you know, every A campaign, and he's training, he's doing crazy amount of miles, and his body's just breaking down. And we couldn't seem to keep him on the right side of that. And so finally that was what we recommended to him. We said, listen, you gotta really check this out because of the low inflammatory type effect. And sure enough, he went vegan that stretch, and his training was able to ramp back up without any real harm, and completed whatever is like Burning River in Ohio or something, you know. So here's the guy's like running 20 hours straight or something crazy like that. But yeah, it was pretty amazing, and we just keep seeing story after story on that. So it's there.
Have you had any negatives?
Yeah, I mean,
any
to be fair, there's a guy who
did he?
No, did you? Have you seen anything? Have you heard stories or have experienced that? Do you through lapses where you're like, good Lord, I need some meat, I'm gonna bite somebody's hand off?
Well, so I say, you know, I also work a lot in industry, right? So I do a lot of work with really sort of blue collar folks who are working every day. And so we have this conversation, it's kind of a running dialogue, you know. People say, well, how could I possibly eat like that? You know, look, I gotta be strong and fit and this and that. You know, if I go to a wedding or something, and my wife and I laugh about it, you know, because anytime I'm like out, like with folks who I work with or know, they're always like the police looking at my food. Like, what's that guy? What's he eating? See, I had a guy actually this morning, like literally walk up to me and in front of one of the medical directors that I work with, bring me a box of 4 Krispy Kreme donuts. And he's like, I just want to see if you'll eat one, you know? And I was like, man, get that out of my face. You know, like this huge guy, he's a very funny guy, but you know, I mean, so if I go to a wedding or something and they're serving prime rib, I'm going to have it. You know, I mean, there's just no doubt about it. I love that stuff. I would eat it 5 meals a day if I could. I just know it does terrible things to me. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing for me. And I wasn't eating prime rib 5 meals a day, but I was eating, you know, chicken breast almost 5-6 times a week. And I was eating lean stuff, but it just, I was fatigued. And, you know, when you look at this research and at least the pro green research and what it does to your circulation and, you know, cause there's research that shows that, you know, it's not the greatest thing and whatever. I mean, I know that, you know, there was something going on. If you just think about if I have high cholesterol, do I have some sort of do I have less blood going to my brain? I mean, I just couldn't imagine not like being as alert as I am now and having this much energy to just work out whenever I want and not needing my afternoon coffee, which I was like desperate for by around like 2 or 3, even when I was driving, you know, I kind of called it like my fatigue time. If I drove in the afternoon, it was like, and every, you know, the rest of my family falls asleep during that time. And my wife does too. So I'm just like trying to like, I'm like slapping myself on the way down the road, opening the window or, you know, in the winter, try to keep myself awake. That stuff doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, I originally thought I just did it for me, but then I've also always been interested in nutrition as a way to help patients. And that's when we hear more stories about, you know, your successes with patients, because I think it's just another thing that we can offer that even though nutrition isn't something that's covered, you can offer it as wellness, you know, in a cash-based practice, or, I mean, you just can't get reimbursed for it as PT. But I think that you also got to go back to basics when people aren't getting better. It's not always like a neuromechanical thing. It could be some sort of physiologic thing. It could be diet. It could be sleep. And I think those are all very important things that PTs kind of tend to ignore, or they don't think of.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that's it's a I mean, you know, I tell people all the time, like that's my thing. That's the drum I'll beat that anytime someone gives me a chance is, you know, once we decide we're going to do that and kind of go after the whole, you know, concept, the whole person, we're going to lead. I mean, I really believe that. I believe that we're in the right position and we can do it 100%, but we have to address exactly what you said. We've got to own sleep. We've got to talk nutrition. You know, we've got to be ready to deal with stress. And, you know, and I get a lot of pushback from people. You know, they're not afraid to say to me, hey, like, we're not nutritionists. You know, but then I always look at it and say, yeah, but we're not psychologists either, but we talk about biopsychosocial pain all the time. You know, like, they all tie in, they all play together, and we have to be able to address them if we're truly going to be like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying we have to be a one-stop shop. I mean, clearly there's collaborative relationships that as PTs we should have, but I really think that it's where we're going to have the greatest impact. I mean, I just think we can have the best impact there. There's no doubt that nutrition, it plays a role. And I'm not like a big supplements guy. Like that's not, you know, I get a little bit off track when people say that to me, like, oh, you know, like should we sell supplements? Like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about actually helping people heal their body through what they put in their body. And I mean, and the science is getting there. It's pretty cool.
Well, I think if you know the science and you know the information or you have the knowledge base, then you can share it. You know, I think the problem becomes is when the 90% of the other PTs that are trained very specifically in movement, orthopedics, and all the other stuff that we do, that just kind of have assumptions or Facebook posts or things like that. And then when they get asked questions, they just kind of regurgitate information instead of really teaching from a sound knowledge base. And I completely agree with you. I think there's room as long as you know what you're talking about for nutrition. I think stress is a huge thing because people say they're stressed all the time. People say, oh yeah, I'm this, I'm that because I'm stressed, but nobody knows what the hell that actually means. People don't relate, you know, what they do. People don't know that when they stress, they change their breathing patterns from diaphragmatic to accessory breathing and overworking the upper traps and all that kind of stuff. People don't know that. We do. So just educating them what stress means and breaking it down on a realistic level, on a functional level, that makes a big difference. And I think the same thing can happen with nutrition and other avenues. But there's if we keep always saying that we can do this, we can do that, then people, you know, will start looking at us like, oh, PTs, that they think they know everything, they can do everything, which is also not the case. We have to pick and choose our battles, but it's always about, you know, playing to your strengths and helping the person in front of you. Web PT is the ultimate EMR for physical therapy. You know that. One of the reasons is because they know ICD-10, and I don't. So I ask Heidi Janenga, COO of Web PT. Heidi, what the heck is ICD-10?
Well, ICD-10 is diagnosis codes on steroids. We're talking more than 68,000 codes. All HIPAA-covered entities must switch to ICD-10 on October 1st, 2015, or face claim denials. That's where Web PT can help. Our intuitive ICD-10 code selector is built right into our documentation platform, thus simplifying the patient diagnosis process. I encourage all of you to check it out. Visit webpt.com/podcast to request a free online demonstration.
Yeah, right on.
Right. Now, do you refer to any like functional medicine physicians or nutritionists?
So occasionally, I mean, like if we have someone who we think needs a like prescriptive diet, right? Like truly needs a dietary plan. That's the realm of an RD in my mind. You know, that's when we will say, hey, that you're really at the limit of our knowledge. We typically, like in our practice, we're not typically dealing with those folks. People don't come to us with like specialty diet needs. They more they're coming because they want to change their lifestyle. You know, they know they want to take a little weight off their frame, or they want to live a healthier life, or they want to, you know, be able to have a higher quality of life. Almost always, that's, you know, they're there for that reason. And what we found was, you know, fitness was the easy one. We would talk a lot about fitness and helping people get fit, and of course that played in well. And so when I was kind of coming out of school, that was, you know, sort of the idea of functional training was just kind of in the very beginning stages. And so it was cool to, and it's been cool to kind of see that evolve and really become what it is. And then we started to look really for some of our athletes, like, how do we get that next performance edge? And nutrition was a major player. And that was, you know, 5-10 years ago. And now we're really looking at stress and recovery as the next, you know, sort of frontier. And how do we keep giving those people that edge? And then typically what we've done is we've taken that knowledge and then tried to apply it to other populations, you know, so in the workplace or in the community. And we just keep seeing great results.
Right. I think the same research that is coming out so much about sleep and recovery for athletes can really just be applied to everyone. It's just that, you know, everyone looks at it from a injury recovery perspective rather than, you know, why does this person have chronic pain who's just like a, you know, office sedentary office worker. I think everyone can pretty much use nutritional information. Same thing with just quality sleep. So just something, again, I think PTs really need to take a look at. And I think it's well within our scope to suggest that if we can suggest exercise and movement and, you know, like, don't sit as long. I think that it is just something you can suggest as part of educational process.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and we've seen some change. Like, we have a local doc now who he's an MD who kind of got out of his practice and wanted to go down this road of sort of like a concierge medicine type approach. And you know, through kind of some mutual clients, he heard about us and we've hooked up, and he literally sends people for movement and fitness evaluations and says, hey, you know, like, we're working on this person's nutrition. I want you to support that, but I really want you to work on the fitness side. And we have a really good collaborative relationship. It's all cash based. You know, we don't deal with insurance on those side. You know, I mean, we do have some insurance contracts, but not in that area. And honestly, people are happy to pay because they're getting their life back, and that's really what they want. You know, I mean, they want to feel good.
Now let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about research, some of the research that you referred to in the study you shared on Twitter. I'm sure you've heard of the China study, right? That's like every vegan's kind of, right. So what do you say about its detractors? And obviously there are a lot of people in the fitness community. They're usually fitness people, usually lifters or you know, strength coaches, who kind of talk about how the data wasn't adjusted and how T. Campbell basically ignored, or maybe he didn't even realize this, but he missed certain populations that were actually eating meat yet still had low incidence of cancer and you know, heart disease.
And what is the study? Can you just give a quick summary of the study?
Please give a summary of the China study to our listeners.
Sure. China study. So T. Colin Campbell, I think he was a Cornell researcher. I'd have to look back on that. But basically the story goes with this guy is that he was one of a few, you know, folks in sort of nutritional science who, you know, grew up on like a dairy farm or something and then started to kind of see some links in some of his data. And basically he's gone all over the world and Philippines for a very long amount of study time, and eventually China, which is of course the name of the book, The China Study. And he saw some real wild interactions. And one of the main ones, kind of the main pieces of the book, was casein, which is sort of a longer acting protein. And, you know, and that's probably why the strength community is up in arms, because it sort of flies in the face of some of their beliefs on protein. And basically what this guy saw was this pretty strong association with different forms of cancer and percentages of casein in the diet. And they looked at all sorts of different things. Like they first started to try to look at like different, like aflatoxin or something on peanuts. And, you know, and I'm reaching back. I haven't read it it's probably been about 12 or 14 years since I read it, but basically that was it. And they saw a huge link between breast cancer and protein consumption, primarily animal protein. And they saw a big link with liver disease, I believe, and liver cancer. So, you know, I mean, they're definitely, you know, you read the sort of, you know, piece by piece takedown of that book, and there are some pretty interesting ones out there by some credible sources. You know, you have to question some of the validity of it. And I think that's, I mean, I don't know. I guess you have to question the validity of almost every research you read. I've never read a study where I've been like, oh my gosh, this is it. You know, like,
right. This definitively that's the one. Everything, and I'm giving up everything I know.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, we have to be skeptical. I mean, we'd like to call ourselves scientists at some levels, so we've got to be skeptics and say that, hey, this is probably not the end all be all, but it's enough to make you stop and ask more questions. And that's kind of where I took it. And then you start looking at other stuff and there are some really good resources out there. I love, I don't know if you guys have heard of Michael Greger. Have you seen his stuff?
Go ahead.
No, he's got a cool, his handle is nutritionfacts, FACTS.org. And he's kind of like this, he's an MD and he's sort of smarmy and sarcastic. He's got a great sense of humor. And he basically just puts out YouTube video after YouTube video and mostly on kind of the research and goes through and takes some studies that are old and kind of landmark stuff and then, kind of goes back and keeps piecing it together. And he's a plant-based guy and it's really pretty interesting stuff. So, I mean, I look at that kind of stuff and I just try to educate myself as best I can. And we just then take that and apply it. Usually we're experimenting on ourselves, right? Like we're doing this stuff kind of personally for our own personal causes. And then we start seeing these links, makes you ask more questions, makes you dive in deeper. And that's really where we got it from. You just keep asking questions and uncovering more and more wild answers.
Right. And the thing about the China study that made it so profound before people started tearing it apart was the fact that it was done in a country where there are billions of people over something like 10 years, and it looked geographically as the like more affluent regions and in poorer regions, and the people who basically couldn't afford as much animal-based protein had a significantly lower cancer rate and also heart disease rate. So, I mean, it was easy to see why he, as a either cardiologist or some kind of cardiac researcher, came to those conclusions. But it's since been disproven. At least he missed certain data because it was not adjusted. And I totally get that. And I think that there's a guy who writes for my Physio Answers blog. His blog is huge. Which is like over 1 million followers. His blog is called Authority Nutrition. And I basically just can content scrape any of the posts he writes. And he looks at everything from a very, very eclectic and kind of evidence-based perspective. And what he showed is basically whether you're going plant-based or Mediterranean or paleo, like anyone who kind of makes a dietary change has health benefits no matter what, just because you probably it's structured, you're eliminating processed foods and sugar and, all these things that basically all these diets do,
Right.
And I think that's what the research pretty much shows is anytime you follow like a healthier diet, of course you're going to have more energy and et cetera, et cetera. It's just that I couldn't do paleo and I was doing South Beach before we had kids and yeah, I had an awesome energy then too. And I was like totally ripped. It's just that my cholesterol was through the roof. So...
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's where, and we get a lot of that, those questions, right. Of like, all right, well, how do you know this is the right one? And that's why, as I said in the beginning, I don't follow any one strict dietary plan. We just look at it as in general, if you were to take sugar down, right. Eat more plants and try to limit processed food, you'd be much better off. I mean, there's no question about that. And it's very, very clear. And the results show it very clearly. If you want a more, kind of aggressive result, you have to go with a more aggressive approach, right? And that's where you start to see some of these really impressive, gains. There's some folks out there who have really looked at kind of, perfusion studies and really looking at kind of the sort of the inflammatory effect of certain types of foods. And that's pretty intriguing stuff in my mind, because again, it looks at sort of the idea of healing, and you're beating up your arteries every day, you're beating up your body every day. So, in our world, we see that maybe result in a pain syndrome or something. But in someone else's world, it might just result in premature breakdown of the system. And how do we give it some healing? So, endothelial lining and blah, 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 blah. But bottom line is that it's pretty wild and we've seen some cool stuff.
Right. There is a great post and a great video that I shared from pained.com. It's pain, biopsych, basically researchers, PTs out of Australia. And they shared some data that basically showed that there are people in chronic pain. Like the longer you've had pain, the more comorbidities these people ended up having. Like there's a direct link between, you know, how long someone's been in pain and how many other health issues they had. And that totally makes sense. And certainly we know from all our pain science that inflammation isn't a reason for pain. But for me, I just call it, it's all about summation. I mean, the brain is eventually going to detect threat. If you have high cholesterol or general like pro-inflammatory diet, plus you sit too long, plus you're not the most fit person in the world, and then whatever, you ended up bending forward 1,000 times in one day, and then that's why your back pain isn't getting better. I mean, it's everything, you know. It's not for people who aren't getting better. I think you just have to look at things that are more than just, you know, you can't go all in with pain science, because an inflammatory diet can make a difference in these people's you know, lives. And that's why I was happy that they kind of said that, you know, for chronic pain, you have to really promote wellness, not just, you know, movement and pain science, but overall they have to be well.
Yeah, I think that I mean, that to me, that's, you know, you hear a lot about people talking, you know, like, hey, we should be practicing at the top of our license. And I mean, to me, that's the critical thinking that allows us to be, you know, like, be at the top of our game. I mean, you know, if it was just a single thing, if we could boil it down to one single thing, I mean, that'd be awesome, because we'd be fixing and curing everybody. But we're not, and no one else is. And so it's almost like, well, you've got to look at the whole picture. And if it's total exposure and some, you know, maybe there's an environmental component that we haven't quite nailed down yet, or who knows? I mean, you know, but we're getting bombarded all the time with the things around us and with us. And I don't mean that from like, you know, sounding sort of way into the extreme, but I mean, if you're, you know, like I love like that, the paleo talk, for example, right? And you know, people say, oh, you know, like, this is evolutionary. Like, yeah, okay, but remember, how did you get that meat every day?
More bacon. I mean, I love me some bacon, but man, not like bacon. Cups of bacon. They eat bacon like it's M&M or Skittles. Like, man.
Well, and I mean, you know, you ran it down though, right? I mean, like, it'd be pretty awesome. Like, that's what I always ask people. I said, well, did you run the 10 miles to kill that thing? Like, no, I don't do that. Well, then come on.
Well, have you ever been to Wegmans? I walk like 10 miles. I walk like Wegmans. 10 miles to get that bacon. You kidding me? This place is huge.
Well, you have Wegmans too. Well, we all three of us have Wegmans. I mean, I don't know. The whole country does not have Wegmans. And if you're listening and a part that doesn't have Wegmans, you are missing out.
Go to a state with a Wegmans. You will enjoy the ride, hunt your food down, walk around for a couple miles, then go to one of their buffets and eat some food. Plant-based.
They have something for everyone.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I think there's always room to talk to people, and we talk about education all the time, but it's not education unless it's relevant. You know, you could tell somebody all the research in the world about how eating, you know, plant-based will make them better, will make them this, but if they don't create a relevant experience, if they don't put themselves in the position of seeing themselves doing it, it's all for naught. You know, people have to really buy in and really see themselves doing this and why they're doing it and why they're committing to it. And I think that's what gets missed a lot of times on the whole education kick, is you just go in a soapbox and you talk at people instead of really understanding where they are. And some of it is empathy, but I think psychology is the big piece here. Empathy is great. Yeah, you have to be on the same wavelength. You have to really see the perspective of the person, but you really have to understand where they're coming from and how to deliver that message to them so they actually process it and then really buy in and then reinforce it, just like anything else. I mean, Ersin, how many times do you have to post something before somebody clicks on it on average on social media?
Jeez, I don't know.
Like 10 times? Like, they have to see, what, like 10 to 12 times before they really process what they're seeing.
I know the stat is like they need 10 times before they even actually think about purchasing it. So yeah, people need to see things over and over and over again. That's actually on social media and on their phone. And that's probably some, you know, they're doing that. They get a lot more reinforcement on their phone than they do at your one or two times a week visit.
Exactly. So it's figuring out.
Yeah, reinforcement, repetition is key.
Exactly. And it's how to make that repetition valuable and get your biggest bang for the buck in the time that you're seeing them, and how to, when you're not seeing them, get that message across. It's pretty tough, you know, even for myself hearing all this. I'm like, yeah, this sounds great, but as soon as I go in the house, I'm gonna cook up some bacon and eat it.
Yeah. Well, as part of the garage series, I'm actually going down and I'm staying with Gene, and luckily he's already got a Vitamix. You have a Vitamix, right, Mike?
Yeah, we've got something like a Vitamix, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be making all kinds of smoothies and whatever, and, you know, I might just eat a triple meat. I'd still eat meat, too. I eat meat at least once every 2 or 3 weeks, just a small amount, and I still love grilling. I just don't eat it. You know, I grilled like 3 hours for a whole party. I just like the smell of it. I just like the whole process of, you know, lighting up charcoal and everything and smoking. I just don't eat it. But yeah, I don't want to lose the ability to digest protein or you know, animal-based proteins either. But, man, I'm gonna introduce Gene to maybe like some overnight oatmeal or some Green Monster smoothies with some butter.
Well, hey, yeah, don't get me wrong. I eat all that stuff. I just eat meat as well. I don't think you're processing how much food I actually eat. You know, I mean, it's not uncommon for me to go for like 4,000 to 7,000 calories in a day.
I would say one thing that Mike alluded to, and I think I learned this from the Forks Over Knives documentary, which is like very, very heavily, you know, like you can't even eat oil or milk or anything. But they did talk about how a plant-based diet helps you like eat less in general. You could eat more, but you also eat less. So in general, say you eat like 500 calories of salad or versus 500 calories of meat that's oily. So the meat just kind of, you know, it's a much smaller amount, obviously, and it's heavier. It kind of sits at the bottom of your stomach versus, you know, a salad, you know, with a lot of, it takes up a lot more space. So PTs would appreciate this, and I appreciate it just as a PT. You know, plant-based diets, things that take up more room end up expanding the stomach and firing the mechanoreceptors of the stomach, which then kind of triggers your brain that you feel satiated because your stomach is now expanding versus you need to eat a lot more heavier things like oily things to have that happen. So, yeah, I mean, the other thing that's happened is not only, I mean, I'm certainly eating and snacking all day, like I eat a lot of nuts and stuff, but I don't have the ability to eat as much as I used to. Like, you guys know what Wegmans marinated chicken breasts are. They're like mutant chickens or something. They're enormous. I used to be able to eat two of those when I was grilling. And, like, you know, I would, like, cut them in half or fourths for, like, the rest of my family. And now I could barely eat, like, a fourth of one. I mean, my stomach just – I just can't eat as much as I used to. It's that I'm probably eating more frequently.
Yeah, you definitely adapt. I mean, there's no doubt, right? I mean, you change based on whatever, but that, so, I mean, that's your stuff, right? I mean, your inputs are different, so you're going to get a complete and total change. It is pretty wild. I mean, you know, you're definitely going to eat more frequently if you are, you know, kind of switching over. But, you know, one of the things you said there, which was kind of cool, was, you know, and I'm guessing you did that consciously, right? The idea of alluding to the microbiome and kind of losing your ability to process, you know, animal proteins and things. And I mean, that's kind of one of the coolest things, I think. And it's sort of like that bleeding edge of some of the science that we're watching is, you know, that you literally do change your gut biome based on what you're putting in and all of the potential changes that come with that. And that's pretty neat stuff.
It is. I mean, everyone kind of knows you are what you eat, but if you're in general unhealthy or you're going through some sort of prolonged pain process, you should probably take a look at what is your fuel, right? I mean, it only makes sense. It's just that people don't really, they don't do the drastic changes they probably need to.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a dosage thing, right? I mean, it's no different than when we talk exercise or talk anything. You know, you've got to have the right dosage to get the effect. And I think that people sometimes miss that, you know, when people talk a little bit about like, oh, you know, I'm going to eat, you know, in moderation, or I'll try this one little thing here. And well, I mean, yeah, you got to have a minimum dosage or you can't expect the effect. But
or they try it without a plan, right?
Well, yeah, just kind of random, you know, like just, you know, I'll try this for a while. And oh, that was great. Then I'll try that for a while. And oh, that was cool.
Right. It's like people saying like, I'm going to go run a mile. So like, oh, you know, people pick up running like they expect to be awesome. They're like, I'm going to run a marathon, but no one ever says like, I'm going to be an amazing golfer without any kind of training or coaching or anything. It's the same thing with nutrition. I mean, you can't just make these drastic changes without a plan.
So I did that exact thing with the marathon, believe it or not.
So yeah. You just ran a marathon?
So yeah, years ago, my dad was a marathoner growing up, and I thought it was like a I thought it was torture. Honestly, I thought it was like the dumbest thing ever. Like, you know, like you run when you mess up in a real sport. Like that was kind of my mentality. Like, oh, you know, like you messed that play up, go run, you know? My brother, who was kind of getting into running at the time, you know, he sort of challenged me. He's like, hey, you know, do a marathon. I said, yeah, I'll do it. I had never run it, like even a local 5K. I never run a race at all. I was like, I'll do it. It can't be that hard. It's just about being tough, you know? Oh man, was I wrong. It was a horrible idea.
Okay, I was going to say, like, wow, did you just, like, totally prove me wrong? Like, you just
killed it? It completely sucked, man. I in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm a good athlete. Like, yeah, I can do a 3:30 marathon. And I got across the finish line, and I was, like, you know, all pissed off. My wife's like, you did great. And I was like, that was awful.
9 hours later, you come across the finish line.
It was miserable.
It was the next day.
Yeah, but then, I mean, I was like, I got to do it again. Like, you know, that's exactly what happened. Like, you just like, I'm doing that again. Now. And then I started actually having a plan and trying to figure it out. And now it's like, you know, you think of it like a skill almost.
Well, right. I think a lot of times it's
are you just a runner or are you triathlete or what? I'm trying to figure this out from you, like your profile pics.
I mean, I've done a little bit of everything on the endurance side. I did Ironman, a couple Ironmans, and I really enjoy that, but it's a ton of time. And I, you know, my wife finally last year looked at me and was like, listen, buddy, like, you know, like you got these three kids walking around. You ever see them? Like, yeah, you should talk to them every once in a while. You know, cause you're either on the bike trainer, you're running or doing something. But, so I had to put that on the shelf for a couple of years until they're a little older. So now I'm only doing marathon.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I just got my 8 and 6 year old to run 5Ks with me, which for them must be like a marathon. Like my 6 year old,
right.
My 6 year old actually cries and she's like, "This time, let's stop." I'm like, "No, we run faster now."
You're trying to kill me.
But it's great though, you know, because like it literally got me back into running.
It's awesome.
Because now I could run with my kids versus before. It's like, hey, dad's coming. I wasn't going to be like one of those guys who, and it's very easy to do this. Like you come home from work, it's like, oh, dad's home. Now I'm going to leave again.
Exactly.
And train.
I'm the opposite. I'm the golfer you guys are talking about.
Oh, nice. you just golf and decided to go out and be awesome at golf?
Well, I played baseball. I played baseball in college. And so when I stopped playing, it was just a natural transition. So when I was like, all right, I could hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, how hard could it be to hit a golf ball? Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, right on.
And so, you know, I started playing, and it's just the mechanics of the swing are just fascinating. And it really is so different. I mean, playing baseball and playing golf are two different worlds. Like being a vegetarian or a strict meat eater, it's completely different.
So, totally
nicely done.
Thank you. But yeah, it was fun. And like you said, Mike, I mean, running has always been a punishment. You know, playing baseball, playing football, you do something wrong, you go run. You know, you say something wrong, you
That's
go right. run.
That's hilarious. It is so punitive in like the sports culture, unless you're just running. Unless you're just a runner,
but
yeah, like people like this. What?
Yeah. Why would you? Do
I don't
that
even
yourself?
Really like it. I just do it. I don't know. Sometimes I like it.
Yeah. It's not bad. I mean, I don't mind like 1 to 3 miles, something like that, once in a while when I want to just punish myself. You know, like when you just want to bring that back as penance, like
self-loathing.
Damn it! I had too much of a steak. I'm gonna go run 3 miles. Penance.
Yeah. After that trip, I'll meet Chipotle. Maybe we'll go run. I'll run before the triple meat Chipotle.
I'm not gonna lie to you guys, man. When I listened to that episode, and first of all, I was not sure about Sin of Air as well. And I've been you guys really that was important. Thank you for taking care of that.
Right.
Because I mean, you know, fascinating. I love his tweets. But yeah, I did cringe a little bit when I heard the triple meat Chipotle bet. I'm not gonna lie to you. Driving along, going like, "Oh man, it's gonna be rough on the inside."
Right. Yeah,
I'm going to videotape the whole thing, the ordering, the opening, and the eating, and I will watch you eat every last bite and then vomit it all up.
Well, you also have to. Oh, yeah, that's probably more meat than I've eaten. Well, by the time I get down there, what is it? First weekend of December is the first garage series. That by then I will have only probably eaten meat like 4 times if I'm still sticking to the once every 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, now you got to stick with it because that will be, I mean, not that we would want to revel in your discomfort.
I'm probably going to vomit, but
I think you will reject, no doubt.
I probably also, I really want to see the Chipotle workers' faces when we order triple meats, and I'm like, hey, you actually got to stick I ordered things other than meat too. You know, it's not just like, I don't just want a bowl of meat and guac, which would be awesome though. Don't get me wrong. I want the other things too. I want the beans and the rice. And
you're going to get it loaded up. So here's our hashtag Project PT. For
this
two
bowls.
tweet at us.
I brought my own bowl.
Bring your own bowl to Chipotle. Like,
is trough. It
for here or to go? Oh, no. Don't worry. I got my own bowl. I got this. Here you go.
I'm at least going to get outside just in case.
I got this. Urson comes with like a gold line bowl to Chipotle.
Sweet. Yeah, they're like, it's him.
Right, just for this one moment.
The eclectic approach to Chipotle eating.
Maybe we should do this after I teach.
So if you go eclectic and Chipotle, do you go with three different forms of meat? Is that how it works?
I don't know. I just kind of figured it would be triple.
Well done.
I should go for all three meats.
Just go full eclectic.
That's what I'm
saying. Going full eclectic. All right, so our hashtag Project PT, awesome. Let us know on Twitter how many bites you think Urson can go before he throws up of Triple Meat Chipotle. So tweet
this
at us.
This is delicious stuff. I mean, I don't.
By the way, I went to Chipotle today, and it was delicious. I can't remember the last time that I went to Chipotle and didn't eat the whole thing.
I still go to Chipotle. I just have Sofrito. Their Sofrito is amazing. Right, Mike?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. I was impressed the first time I had it.
It's very meat-like.
Yeah, it's
I'm still
good.
At the meat. I'm still at like the stage that you go out and you search for things that are meat like. Like I have a lot of black bean burgers. We make black bean burgers. You know, that kind of stuff.
Nothing.
So. Yeah, you're still like detoxing, giving
nothing
it up.
Yeah. About anything with meat like in a sentence sounds appetizing to me. I'd eat something more green. Like if you tell me, oh yeah, this is green. This is vegetarian. Then if you tell me, oh, hey, try this meat-like burger, I will take that burger and throw it at you for saying something like that to me.
Wait, you never had like – you don't want Shaytan buffalo chicken wings? They're pretty good, man. It's like meat-like.
Meat-like substance.
Reference my little speech 30 seconds ago. No. Nothing
we'll
meat-like.
We'll see. Hey, I was where you were just 3 months ago. I was like – I was just grilling every day. And then I went through like a 40-pound bag of charcoal in maybe 2 weeks.
that's impressive.
That's a lot of charcoal.
That is a lot
some
of
joke.
Yeah, no wonder your wife's gallbladder decided to protest.
Yeah, it basically started like 2 months before that. After every meal, she's like, "This is awesome," but my stomach hurts. So it's kind of she ate a lot, you know. And then it started to be like more right lower quadrant. And then, of course, when I'm gone, she has the full blown attack. So
that's how it works. Those lower quadrant attacks
good,
are
though.
No joke.
So good.
I had I woke. This was years ago when I was actually in PT school. Still, I woke up in the middle of the night, and my wife, who was my fiance at the time, you know, woke up. It felt like my stomach was expanding out and getting ready to just like leave my body. I mean, it was excruciating pain, and I've never experienced anything like that before. So, you know, I couldn't fall back asleep. And, you know, I imagine like if you went to Mexico and you drank their water, that's what it would be like. Except there's no relief, you know, for the graphic minded people. But, so, you know, didn't sleep the whole night, woke up, went to school the next day because, you know, you're not supposed to miss days of PT school, they tell you, well, the world will end. And, you know, come home the next day, like, pale. My wife's like, or my fiance, she was at the time, like I said, she's like, you need to go to the ER. And I was like, I'm sure it's just a little virus. She's like, no, you look like death. You need to go to the ER. So I go to the ER, get admitted, ran a CT scan, which is a fun experience. If you ever had a CT scan, with the dye, when they inject the dye into you, it feels like you could feel your blood vessels. It feels like cold yet hot fluid, and you can almost feel like all the capillary. It's a crazy feeling. So I got admitted, and I was like right at the early stages of appendicitis. They caught it just, it just got inflamed. So they admitted me to the hospital with and got treated by antibiotics. I didn't have surgery. Which was interesting because at that time that was still a fairly newish thing. They've been doing it for a while, but it was mostly in baseball players that did one surgery because they wanted to get back quicker. So I spent 3 days in the hospital on antibiotics. Inflammation went down, and go back to PT school. And we were learning psoas release at that time. So I had a pretty good relationship with the professors, let's call it that. And so he picked me to show the psoas release, and I thought he was going to do it on my left side. So
he did on the right.
He did it on the right because I was laying, so you know I could face the class. So usually you would do it on the side that you're standing on, but he reached across so everyone else could see, and he did that. And I mean, I folded it up in half like an accordion. I thought that was it. You know, I was getting ready to punch him in his throat. I was like, you son of a bitch, you ruptured my appendix. but no, I stood up after that and I felt a lot better because I spent pretty much 3 days, you know, flexed over, you know, activating my psoas and every single hip flexor that I could find in guarding mode. So he did that. It felt terrible when he was doing it, but I resisted the urge to judo chop him in the throat and felt better afterwards. But that's my lower quadrant story.
Right. Well, it's also part because we can't really make tissue changes with a decent amount of force unless it's, you know, greater than 4,000 pounds. So that's good. That's probably why. That's why I teach the pain-free psoas release. It's all about tone, not tissue changes.
Yeah, there is no pain-free. I'm pretty sure you could have breathed on my psoas at that time, and I would have felt.
Well, yeah, at that point, yeah, that was a little sensitized for good reason. But man, did he just forget? Is he just being a jerk?
Probably a combination of the two.
Yeah.
I'm a forgetful jerk. Yeah. It's the worst kind of jerk.
More latter than former. But yeah. it was all good in the end. All good things. All right. Well, I feel like I at least have a better understanding of plant-based things and going green. I'm not. I'm not going to lie.
You need a reason to do it.
Immediate urgency. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm like everybody else. I'm more, you know, more reactive than proactive. If something happens and I feel like I need to do it, I probably will. But I'm genuinely curious, but I feel like I don't have enough in front of me. I feel like I have to do too much work right now. I have to look up too many things, and there's just too much of an unknown for me to do it because I still have no idea the recipes. I don't know what I should cut back. And so that's the kind of stuff I'm curious about. So Mike, is there somewhere I can go, or listeners can go, if they want to look up recipes, if they want to know more stuff from you about what that really takes and how to transition to a more green-based lifestyle? What can they do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to be a resource for sure. I mean, you know, you can anytime you can hit us on our website. Proactivity.com, so proactivity.com, or fuelgoodcafe.com. That's the cafe side. Definitely, Twitter is awesome. I'm a huge fan. I try to lurk and watch as much as I can whenever I can. But you know, there's tons of resources out there. I mean, it's mostly just having some fun and trying stuff, and keeping an open mind. So my suggestion to you, Gene, besides the triple meat Chipotle, of course, would be keep. Don't think about what you should cut out. Think about what you should add. You know, just put more good stuff in. See where it goes.
That is a good way to put it.
So let's close out. We mentioned cinema at Cinema Air a lot on this podcast. So he asked a question for you, Mike. So let's close it out with this. What is the brightest of the bright spots in PT today?
And that is a... That is not a joke of a question.
That is not. And that's a closing question. So you get one sentence before I cut you off.
You know, one shot at it.
One shot.
I like the idea of us truly being a disruptor. I think that's the brightest of the bright spots. It really is. Us getting in early, the faster we get there, lower cost, higher value. We can be the difference maker. Brightest of the bright spots.
Boom. I like it.
Nice. I agree. I concur. That would be my closing thought.
You would. You green vegetarian plant eaters, you would.
It's just nice having someone else on the podcast who's like been doing it longer than me. And people are like, we spoke to Johnny Owens, who's from Texas, you know, shout out. Second in the garage series.
That's right, BFR.
Yeah, BFR. Be there. Or be atrophied. Yeah, it's nice. Johnny's like, yeah, good luck with see how many months you can came up with that. And I'm like, I kind of plan on feeling better for as long as I'm alive. So like I said, I haven't given it up completely. You know, I haven't gone all in. So yeah, I think everything in moderation.
Definitely trying to cut back the greasy stuff. I can definitely feel more lethargic, you know, when you have a gigantic juicy cheeseburger, then you're just like, ugh. But yeah, but still, like you said, lean meats I'm pretty good with. But I will introduce more green stuff once I go to Mike's site and check it out. So Mike, thanks so much for joining us, man. It was enlightening, as much as green stuff can be enlightening, I guess. But I really feel like a lot of people will benefit from this information, and hopefully just, you know, spark a little curiosity to check it out.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, and thanks for what you guys do. I think it's a good thing for the profession. Good conversations.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, man.
I guess my closing thought is to summarize: if your patient isn't getting better, you may want to think about other things that different practitioners could address, and always have a short list of, you know, nutritionists or functional medicine doctors or just people who look at things very differently than what you would do, because there's probably a solution to what is going on with them or why they don't feel better. And it may not just be purely something that you can kind of handle with whatever your movement and education based strategies are.
Well said. Absolutely. So again, Mike, thank you so much. For our listeners, check us out at updocmedia.com. At this point, we have most of our podcasts going with the Strength Doc podcast, the Running Story, and Jerry Durham's podcast will be launching very soon. Reviews are always very much appreciated. So check us out on iTunes. Just type in Therapy Insiders Podcast and the other podcasts as well, Strength Doc with John Russin and Running Story with Amanda Loudon, have been getting a really good reception, and people have been liking them so far. They've been pretty good. We're biased, but they've been good, especially for me, since I listened to them like 6 times when editing them. So check them out. Tweet at us, like we said, like Mike said, Twitter's great. We love the conversations. It's probably the most fun of this podcast is then kind of discussing them with you and what you think. So check me out at Therapy Insiders, Urson at the OMPT. And Mike, what's your Twitter handle?
At Mike Eisenhart.
Simple enough. So again, for Urson and Joe that's not here, Mike, thanks so much. And we'll catch you guys next time.